Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast, by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David. Happy Canada Day to you.
Yes. Man. Yeah, we're all pretty glum. We're all pretty glum, sitting here all unshaved and unwashed and looking at the nonstop at the celebration going on in Toronto at the Tavares signing, and then suddenly something happened, Bruce, and almost every single fan, including all the fans who have been dumping on Shirelli, somewhat justifiably or entirely justifiably, became happy in one single moment. What was that moment, Bruce?
Well, having been writing my own post for a chunk of the day, I'm going to guess the big moment was the announcement that Toby Reeder is returning to Edmonton, if indeed he was ever here in the first place.
He was here. We saw him at a dev camp, right?
Yeah, we saw him
with Taylor Hall and Jordan Everly. He looked really good, actually. So he signed a one-year deal, 25-year-old player, signing a one-year deal for $2 million. So, and on a day, Bruce, when there has been some crazy freaking contracts handed out, I mean, wow. I'm just going to run through a few of them real quick here just to put it in perspective. So Jay Beagle, who's 33, he got 20 points last year. He got 4 years at $3 million a year in Vancouver. Blake Como, who's 32, he got 34 points last year. So he's in kind of reader's class, but he's 32. He got 3 years, I think, at 2.4 or 2.2.
We got the same number of points as Kyle Brodziak last year.
Yeah. Tyler Bozak, who's not a bad player, he's 32. 3 years at $5 million. Antoine Roussel, who's 29, and again heading out of his prime, 4 years at $3 million. So Bruce, not bad in comparison to those deals. And the Kyle Brodziak signing. So let's have some order to the podcast.
Sure.
We'll save the best for last. We'll save Reeder to last, and we'll start
in the order that came down.
Okay, let's do that. Kyle Brodziak. So what do you think of the Brodziak signing?
Well, you know what? I'm upbeat about it. And the more I looked at it, the more upbeat I became, to my surprise. I'm one of these, I can be pretty cynical during the season and pretty optimistic in June and July. And this is July 1st. So we're right like smack dab in the middle of that. But I mean, let's start with an admission. I was and remain a fan of Kyle Brodziak back from when he was first drafted by the Oilers, and always impressed in dev camp and training camp. And, you know, he went back to junior, and then he did his time in the AHL, and he got his trials in the NHL, kind of like Jujhar Kara's progression. It took him the full 3 years, and then he made it as a full-time NHLer. And for 2 years at age 23 and 24, he was a pretty solid fourth-line center for the Oilers. He scored points. He played on a pretty effective line, especially the Krostyniaks, you'll remember. But
Curtis Glenn Cross, Zach Storkini. But Bruce, apparently Craig McTavish didn't think he had enough jam and enough compete. And shortly after McTavish, same season, McTavish made that comment at the end of the year. McTavish was gone, but so was Kyle Brodziak, shipped off for pretty much nothing by Steve Cambellini in one of the worst trades of that period. But a typical trade where they would give up on these players who were decent players in their prime. They develop them, you know, Jeff Petrie, Tom Gilbert, Andrew Cogliano, Jarrett Stoll, Matt Green. You know, the heart of that lineup was ripped out with a series of ridiculous, well, some of them might have been somewhat justifiable, but generally speaking, ridiculous moves.
Yeah, I just didn't understand it. Here they had a player who was blossoming. He made in his 2 years as an Oiler, his cap hit was $497,500. I looked it up, literally minimum at that time. And they were worried about that he would get an increase, which in fact he did in Minnesota to around $1.1 million, which ironically is what the Oilers are paying him today. But he brought a lot to the 4C position. You know, he was big, he was right-handed, smart player. Like, he played center. His wingers did the banging. he put the pucks into the corners, and the guys like Stortini went in and hammered the guys that went after it. Right.
I mean, okay. So, what do you like about the signing now, though? Let's.
Okay. Let's go forward 9 years that we missed in Edmonton when they traded the heart of his career away, and what we bring him back is a 33-year-old guy who's coming off of a very good season, 33 points in St. Louis. He played fourth line for the first three quarters of the season, and then after the Paul Stastny trade, he got a 5 minute per game bump in his even strength ice time, which says he played third line the rest of the way, if not second line. He played with Patrick Berglund and Alex Steen, pretty darn good line mates that he played with, and he answered the bell. His points per game went from 0.3 to almost 0.7. So he showed that capacity that you absolutely love to have in a depth forward, that if you have a need higher up the lineup and you bump the guy, does he get destroyed or does he hold his own? And he held his own and then some in the most recent 20-game sample we have of the guy. And this is, you know, at the end of his 33-year-old season. So that's good. I like that the deal's only 2 years. The pay rate, I mean, compare it to what Derek Ryan got or what Jay Beagle got. And you've got, I mean, he's got something in common with those guys. He's a right-handed center, NHL veteran on the wrong side of 30. And maybe he's the oldest of them, and maybe he has the least value, but they're paying him like 30% or 40% of what those guys are making in Calgary and Vancouver. And they just didn't have room to sign. Even if they wanted to sign Derek Ryan or Jay Beagle, they couldn't have afforded it. This is, I think, a pretty reasonable alternative that they're paying. I mean, even if it winds
so that's up, why you like the more. That's why you like the signing more, because you started to compare it to the other similar players. And I don't mind actually the Derek Ryan signing, because I see a player who made the NHL later in life and is really hungry. Like, I just get the sense, you know, I don't know. There's something about his numbers. I haven't seen him play that much, but just the verbal around Derek Ryan. Like, I see a really hungry player, so I don't mind that signing. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with Jay Beagle, but you're that age and you signed for that long. And I can't see that working out for Vancouver. That's like a 20-80 bet that's going to work out for you. Maybe it's a 50-50 bet in the first year, but it sure drops fast after that. So Brodziak, he's probably like a 70-30 bet this year for the Oilers that he works out. And then after that, he's probably 50-50. But the worst case scenario is he gets sent to the minors next year and the Oilers only have a slight
200K.
Yeah, it's not much. They just replace him with a similar player, so it's not that bad a deal. So, yeah, there's a very little downside in this signing, because he signed right around that $1 million mark, as opposed to Beagle and Derek Ryan, where there's a lot more risk attached. Like, they need these are players who are never great players. They were only, you know, third, fourth line NHL players at best, and they're investing a lot of money. They're paying them like they were their average. It's the average NHL salary these guys are getting in these other places. So good luck to Vancouver and Calgary.
Arguably, all three of them are Mark Letestu 2015. And the Oilers signed Letestu to a three-year deal at that time for 1.8. It turned out to be moderate value. You know, he did a lot of things for the Oilers. He did have one really good year and helped them the year that they were competitive. But both Ryan and Beagle are getting, you know, way more than that. Now, granted, they maybe were a little ahead of where Letestu was at that particular time. And Brodziak is making 60% of what they paid Mark Letestu. So if you wanted to look at cap, compare year over year, your 4C, last year you had $1.8 million tied up there. And this year you've knocked that down by $650,000. That's enough to sign another NHL minimum player.
So, Bruce, let's move on to Kevin Gravel. Do we know? We don't know.
I think it's Gravel.
He is an American. He played at St. Cloud in Minnesota. His college hockey. Where is he from? Do you know?
St. Cloud State, I think.
Yeah, St. Cloud State, but I don't know if he's an American or not. Anyway, I know nothing about the player, although apparently, like, he played more than 60 games in Los Angeles the last 2 years. I don't remember him being in their lineup. I don't remember hearing his name even. So maybe he didn't play against the Oilers, or maybe I just missed it. And I don't remember his style of play, but what I read from him is he's actually kind of a fairly somewhat skilled guy. He's a great big guy, but he's, not an aggressive defenseman, but good positionally and can move the puck a bit. He's been set back by Crohn's disease last summer. He had a terrible bout of it and lost apparently about 30 pounds, which will set you back as a hockey player. But he was trending. He was trending to make the Los Angeles Kings before he got sick, and then he got beat out by other players, obviously, this year. So he strikes me as he's a seventh. He's in competition for the seventh D-man spot with Keegan Lowe and Ryan Stanton. And he's a bet. You know, there's a chance that Andre Sekera doesn't make it back as an NHL player. He can't be as bad as he was last year and keep playing, I don't think. And there's a chance that happens. I think it's actually a better chance that he will rebound and be at least a decent player, not as good as he was. But if Sekera doesn't make it back, this means that a player like Gravel will have a shot at third pairing minutes now and then. And so I think it was sound business, sound thinking for the Oilers to bring in a left shot guy who can compete with Lowe and Stanton for that spot.
Yeah, well, his stats, I'm just looking at him here now. And cause of course he wrote this post while I was busy on the one on Brodziak, but 70 NHL games played, so just under a full season. He's 26 years old, so he will be an unrestricted free agent a year from now, for what that matters. One goal, 9 assists, 10 points, plus minus of even 8 penalty minutes, and an average of 1 shot on goal per game and 14 minutes of ice time per game. A very vanilla line of statistics. 1 hit per game, 1 block shot per game.
So, he's in the Bill Height class of defensemen. The big non-physical defensive D-man.
2 career takeaways. Yeah. Okay. So he's obviously, I would suggest, unaggressive would be. I mean, let's assume he's a positional contained style player. He's a big man. And some people who've seen him play say that he's got better hands and should have better numbers than he's got. Which means zero. It's not all bad, especially in the Bettman point era. Players that can break even on your third pairing and fourth line are not the worst. But this is clearly a depth insurance type signing, no real different from Mike Stanton.
Is it Mike Stanton or Ryan Stanton?
Ryan Stanton, my bad. Mike Stanton's a ball player.
All right, let's quickly move on then to the more exciting
news. I know him real well from his 0 games that he played with the Oilers last year.
Yeah. So Tobias Reeder, I mean, I remember him from that dev camp being a very fast, skilled player. I was thinking, wow, this guy doesn't look that a whole lot different than Jordan Eberle. And he just kept I think he was drafted in, what, the 5th round or the 4th round? Let me just check here with Tobias Reeder. And
4th round.
And he just kept getting better, Bruce. His stock kept improving as he went along in the NHL. And he made the Arizona Coyotes. I think he got 37 points 3 years ago, then 34, and I think it was 25 last year. So he's trended down. His stock has dropped somewhat as a player, which is why the Kings didn't qualify him at $2.2 million. But everyone was expecting him to at least get what he got last year. And I think people were expecting something in the range of about $2.5 million for him. If I'm, you know, I think that would have been and a multi-year deal for Reeder.
That's a bigger issue.
So the Oilers, this is another value signing. They get a guy who's heading into his best years, who was a decent, even strength player last year, who fits slots into the depth chart, probably on one of their top two lines, and what an opportunity for him. He gets to play with probably Draisaitl or McDavid. He has this great opportunity to play with one of those two guys and really pump up his value. So it's a good deal for Reeder, a great opportunity, but it's also excellent for the Oilers. I mean, it was looking kind of grim in the moments before this, but all of a sudden, even Shirelli's biggest critics were praising him for the work that he did today.
What Reeder can really do is skate. He's a good skater. I would suggest that the natural fit for him may be with Draisaitl, just because they both have the background from Germany, right? I mean, I remember when the Oilers traded Reeder for Cale Kessie, and then drafted Draisaitl right after, and people are going, oh my, can you imagine that German combo? Now, I don't put a huge amount of stock in that, but I do put a non-zero amount of stock that they might be more likely to click having come up through possibly similar backgrounds in Germany. His position, I mean, being a left winger, I mean, he's going to be competing with RNH very likely, and Lucic.
I've read a few tweets, at least, that he might play the right side.
Okay.
That he is a left shot guy who plays the right side. So I'm not exactly 100% sure about that.
Right. Well, we'll see. I mean, I've seen him as a left winger, but not that often. You know, I did happen to be present. I was sitting with Paul Almeida at the famous shift where Toby Reeder scored two shorthanded goals against the Oilers in 58 seconds. This was in his rookie season, 2014-15, one of his early games with the Coyotes. And I think it was his first game back in Edmonton. And the Oilers were trailing, I think it was 2-1 early in the second period and on the power play and in the game. And all of a sudden, wham, wham, it was 4-1 and the game was over. And people were sour, sour, sour at that trade and at how good Reeder looked. And a lot of people started, I think, lusting for the guy at that moment. And like he has four shorthanded goals in his entire career. Two of them came in 58 seconds against the Oilers. So I wouldn't read too much into the shorties. Other than, I will say this, I just looked up over the last 3 years, shorthanded ice time for forwards that are currently with the Oilers. So Letestu's gone, a bunch of these other guys are gone. But the current guys that are now with the Oilers, average ice time on the penalty kill, tied for number one, Kyle Brodziak and Toby Reeder, minute and 50 seconds. RNH is down in third at a minute and 29, and then you go all the way down to under 70 seconds per game. Like they just added two experienced penalty killers to a club that had a huge gaping hole in that department. So there's an actual point to these signings beyond the 5v5 play. They've potentially, assuming they're decent penalty killers, which we're obviously going to see, but they're experienced penalty killers, and that was a huge need.
Well, we don't have to see, hopefully, Draisaitl and Kujula on the PK anymore. Man, they were terrible. And honestly, I'd rather not see McDavid. I know like the great players want to play all the time and they want to do everything they can to help a team win. But him, part of being on the PK now is blocking shots. And the thought of Connor McDavid getting injured blocking shots, which happens regularly,
right before Christmas,
makes me sick to the stomach, Bruce. Like, I don't think it's worth it. Like, he's not that much better on the PK. In fact, he's not better on the PK. So might as well put out Zujar, Kyra, Cassian, Reeder. I'm okay with RNH doing it, you know, especially if he's not on the top power play unit. Bruce, the other thing about the Reeder signing, of course, is it really changes the depth on the Oilers' wings. Yamamoto now, Kyler Yamamoto was looking like earlier today, I'm starting to think, well, maybe it'll be okay. Maybe Yamamoto's ready for the NHL. I've been thinking that the last few days. But this makes me think, Bruce, that like he really can now get a year in Bakersfield. Unless he just totally dominates, he's going to be heading down to Bakersfield where he can show at least he can dominate at the AHL level for 30, 40 games before he gets that call up. And the same for Cooper Marody. They both get that opportunity now because of the Reeder signing. And it doesn't, you know, if they really are ready, they'll be in the NHL, but the owners don't have to force them anymore, which was kind of like, oh God, how much have we seen that? So.
Yeah. Well, especially if, as you say, Reeder is capable on the right side, which I've seen him as a left winger and he shoots left. So I just assumed that's what he always did, but he's if he's an option on the right side, that does open up a little bit because it's a right wing depth chart that you and I have harped on before. You know, Ratty, Aberg, Puljujärvi, Cassian, right? That was the four that ended last season. And to say they were subpar NHL depth chart on right wing would be putting it very politely.
So, Bruce, I think that's it. According to my calculations, that's it for the Oilers. They have now allotted, I mean, they'll sign some minor league guys, but they've allotted, is it $79.5 million the cap this year?
Yeah, I believe that's correct.
That's
yeah.
The number I heard, and that, I think they have now allotted that entire amount. If Puljujärvi even gets, if he gets $800,000 in bonus, Mm-hmm. I think he's eligible for $1.5 million in bonus. Now, if the Oilers have to overspend on the cap a little bit this year because Puljujärvi meets all those targets, I don't think the Oilers are going to complain one little bit. But I think they are reasonably right at the cap now, and this is it. There's not going to be any more signings of NHL players. They could, in theory, bring in a guy on $1 million who wouldn't hurt the cap if they send him to the AHL, excuse me, all year long. So that's a possibility. But I think, ladies and gentlemen, these are your 2018-19 Edmonton Oilers.
At least until the Lucic trade at 12:01 a.m. tomorrow morning after his bonuses have been paid. Eh? And I mean, that could change, obviously. Something like that could really move the landscape. And it's actually a viable scenario that they hold off to that date for that reason. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying they're close enough to the cap that something's going to need to happen. And you've obviously, in your case, you have assigned a certain dollar amount to the pending RFA deals to Nurse and Strome, which haven't been signed. But when they do, they're going to take up probably $6 million, I think, is a pretty
middle-of-the-road
estimate. And that might be on the underside, given some of the wild dollars getting thrown around in the league these days.
I think there is almost no chance Lucic gets moved. I know a lot of people are still holding out hope for that. And I was thinking earlier on that it might be a likelihood. But, man, his agent has been so emphatic. And I can see an agent coming out pouring cold water on it. But the guy is a straight shooter. He's been emphatic. Like, he's coming back next year. Like, I don't know where these rumors come from. This is, you know, essentially he's calling it malarkey. And I just don't see, agents lie all the time. People say on Twitter, hey, agents lie all the time. Yeah, but there's way people lie when they're lying. And this doesn't strike me as that. This strikes me as him trying to get through every rockhead in Edmonton, set this aside, and his own message to Lucic, probably the same thing. Put this aside. Lucic is coming back. He's an Edmonton Oiler this year, full stop. And that's how I see it, Bruce.
Yeah, and Jerry Johansson, right? And he's my impression of him has always been he gives the straight goods, and he actually does give information too. It's not like he covers everything up. But anyway, one last point about the Toby Reeder signing, by the way, which affects the salary cap. 1 year deal, and a year from now he's 26, and he is a restricted free agent. It is very rare that you sign an unrestricted free agent who you then get RFA rights on. It only happens when another team gives up on a guy, as LA did with Toby Reeder. So the Oilers have dibs on him a year from now. If he has a great year, he might cost more, but they still have the rights to him. And if he doesn't have a great year, guess what? They're not stuck with a $2 or $3 million cap hit for two or three more years like they might be if they went term with the guy.
So he's just like Ty Ratty, who's also going to be an RFA. So I really love the fact that they have. This is exactly what I was hoping would happen, that they would bring in three or four guys like Ratty, like Pontus Aberg, like Tobias Reeder, who are heading into their peak years, not out of them, and make their essentially what I see is 50-50 bets on any of these guys working out. But if you can bring in three or four of these guys, or just as opposed to one of them, that really increases your odds of at least finding one guy who can play with Draisaitl or McDavid. And I think let's say there's a four guys in the same boat, Kajula, Aberg, Reeder and Ratty. And there might even be another one that I'm like, they're all essentially in the same boat. I think they're going to probably find two guys there. Strome might be in that same boat. That can at least get the job done reasonably well on a line with McDavid or Draisaitl on the top two lines. And Puljujärvi is another, you know, I don't know if he's a 50-50 bet to get that done. He might be, I personally think he should be a better bet than that, but you know, I'm not convinced about the organization's handling of that player. I see some worrisome things. So anyway, I think it's a good day, Bruce, a very good day.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I read a list of Oilers' priorities as being, sign a center, sign an NHL caliber winger, sign a depth defender. And if you look at the three things that they did today, it's exactly those three things at a total cap hit in the range of $4 million for three guys, whereas usually they're tossing $4 million per per player. You know, that's the reason they got in this mess in the first place, is they have all these long-term packs at $4+ million. So they have to supplement cheaper players. And the bet is, can they play in the NHL? Well, the track record suggests these are reasonable bets.
Let's leave it there, Bruce. Thanks for talking today.
All right. And I'll wish everyone a happy Canada Day.
That was a whole lot of red material there, Bruce. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, you're not? Oh, okay. I guess I got to move back. There you go. You'll recognize that. Anyway, it's the one day a year. We might as well enjoy ourselves. I got to work this evening, but the rest of you crack a beer and toast the Oilers' future success, we hope.
And Canada's success.
Indeed.
I think we're all right. Let's leave it at that. Thanks, Bruce.
Thanks for listening and watching, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.